to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast for three Dungeon Masters. I've been doing this for way too long. Talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
Help! I need somebody help! Not just anybody help! You know I need someone help! But don't know it's younger so much. Yeah, dude. And then they go into like kind of the call and response vocals.
Sort of like a round
kind of thing. Yeah. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Three Wise DMs. It is the Rock and Roll DM, DM Dave. Obviously, that was Help by the Beatles from their hit album and motion picture, Help by the Beatles. So
aptly titled
as they put in like the little flag things to spell out help or whatever on the cover. All right, so why help though? Well, what we're going to here is this dovetails off a couple things. So first, in the grand tradition of Matt Colville's Running the Game, where he is trying his damnedest to get people to run D&D. Look, guys, look how easy it is. Here's 87 episodes to show you how simply you can run D&D for yourself. Then, what do you do as experienced forever DMs when one of the players finally runs a session? How do you help them along so that they want to do it again? Because it's fun to play too, right? So, this started because I defy anyone out there in the TTRPG sphere and community to show me another group who has conquered the birthday D&D game the way Three Wise DMs has. Okay, I defy
you. It's impossible.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's kind of our thing.
Yeah, and if you have, I expect to see some evidence in our comments. Reach out to us on Facebook, on Instagram, at threewisedms.com, email us at threewisedms@gmail.com, right? I want to know, because I don't think it's real. I think we have it. And in proper fashion, we ran yet another birthday game for the Wizard Washburn, Scott Washburn, our resident artificer, who I don't think he will mind everyone knowing that it was his 70th birthday this year. He is the OG Wizard Artificer and the patriarch of our gaming group, in my opinion. So anyway,
happy birthday, Scott.
Happy birthday. Woo! Yes. Write him a happy birthday note in the comments. You guys very well know my partner, girlfriend, Bonnie, the Chaos Engine, little one. If you go all the way back to episode 26 from December of 2020, when we were little baby podcasters, where we had the D&D and mental health episode, we were talking, we had Bonnie on as a guest because we were talking about using D&D in therapy, and she was running games as a counselor using role play as therapy. She was using D&D games. So she's not completely new to it, but she is a newish DM, and she took the reins in Scott's birthday game, and she used a kind of a 5e Star Wars kitbash thing that she had found online. You can find different ones where people have kind of reskinned it into the Star Wars universe, and she ran a game. So I have been talking a lot here. I know I kind of rambled here, but that's kind of the setup here. And then as Three Wise DMs sitting at the table, what do we do to help this newish DM run a great game, have a great time running, and want to sit back down behind the screen again?
Well, I want to say that I applaud the boldness of running a prototype system like that. I think that's fantastic. And it was still obviously very heavily versed in 5e, but it's not vetted. It's not established. But
yeah,
we all pick it up pretty quickly. In those regards, and without getting into it too deeply, it did what it needed to do. Like, I felt like it was relatively smooth, and you definitely shifted from I'm running around the sword and the shield to I got a lightsaber and a blaster. with the structure of the game, what I would advise is don't feel like you're so tripped up and trapped by the rules that everything has to go exactly how it is written, so to speak, in terms of combat and every little drop of things, in terms of making sure you spend that last monster's last hit point before we move on. Because I talked to a lot of different groups, and they're like, yeah, well, we try to fit in 3 encounters a night. And I'm like, 3 encounters? Yeah, they're talking like 3 combat encounters, and that soaks up a lot of time. And I think that could be more easily used by a variety of different things, resolving other problems, not necessarily through combat, at least not in such a lengthy fashion. That time could be devoted in other places. It'd be easier on you as the DM, too.
Yeah, no, I think, and as bad as an experienced DM at table, it's like you're providing tips. So if there's like a basic knowledge on like, hey, it's a potion of healing, you know, it's like 2d4 plus 2 or whatever, right? Or is it, did I get that right?
Yeah, you're good. You're good. Yeah.
Give me a demerit if I got that wrong.
I'm the experienced DM. Wait, what the hell is it?
Yeah, it is. As I'm saying, you just say it loudly with confidence, and then that sounds like you're a rules expert. But my point being is that you can see the spots where you need to say, like, oh, yeah, that's an athletics check there. If you're thinking, like, you can help to guide them in the, you know, if they reach a point where they're, like, not quite sure, or there's, like, instead of having to go back to the rule book, you're like, oh, hey, yeah, no, that's just 2d4 plus 2 or whatever it is. I hope that's what it is. I'm going to have to check it to this, but I think to Tony's point too is that you have to leave room, even as experienced at the end, it's like everybody's table's different, so you have to leave room for them to be able to figure it out on their own. At the end, they're going to have to do their own like lessons learned and be like, what did I like about what I did, what did I not like about what I did. But there's only so much you can impart at the table and before you start to become a little bit, you know, our experience and our knowledge can make us very like, I hate the word powerful, but like, you know, we can just, oh, that's this, or no, this is how this works. It's that person's world at that point. So they get to decide. And so I think that's something good. And that's also something that kind of helps you grow. And I think can maybe be part of what maybe draws them back in is that they start to figure it out on their own. They come up with a solution to how this encounter or this role play situation is going to go. And it resolves itself. And they're like, oh, hey, wow, so I can do this now, right? It's like, you know, you start to figure out that it's not just reading from the passage and then we roll dice. Like, they start to find all those little nuances in the spaces there by giving them some space and just providing tips when they're sort of actively looking for it, you know, as opposed to always being like a bit of a rules attorney and throwing it in there, which you'll get with just experience at the end of the table a lot of times anyway.
One of the big things I think you were starting to touch on it there, Chris, is because I know Bonnie had said it several times during that night. She was like, well, I'm running a game with the three wise DMs. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, like blah, blah, blah. We're very tongue in cheek with that, you know, but we all run a lot of games. We run very long, big campaigns with all the people at the table when we're in the seat. And I think that there is a level of, even if you have run games before, you've maybe run a campaign even, you've played with other groups, there is a level of trepidation when you're now playing, I'm sorry, when you're now DMing, you're running a session with the people who ran these really intense, awesome, you know, epic campaigns, and you're like, oh geez, what am I supposed to do? So I think that there's a level of trepidation there. I know I've even had that. I mean, the birthday boy himself has talked about it, Scott. I mean, he's been playing D&D since 73 when it first came out, but he still has a level of trepidation with like, I want to make sure I know I'm doing it well enough, I'm immersing people enough, people are going to enjoy it. And to bounce off your point there, Chris, I think that's one of the biggest things is you are a great resource. And we've said this many times on different casts, but you are an excellent resource for rules, at least the ones that we know, right? Because like Chris made a great point. Like, dude, I'm like, well, this is how possession works. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, hold on a second, right?
Exactly how possession works today. Right, exactly.
Yeah. let me actually look. Because like I literally, two episodes ago, we were talking about how I would look down and be like, oh, that's how much damage that thing does. Okay, well, you're dead. You know, so you don't always know. But you are a great resource because you've done a lot of this kind of stuff. And we have all done it enough times that we can improv on the fly with it to a point. But you have to be very careful to allow them the room to breathe, to make their own game, and not say, well, actually, you know, don't do that thing. Like, many times was one of the things I noticed during the game that Bonnie was running, because Bonnie's always, as a player, she's always loving to do, like, odds and evens. Like, okay, I'm going to either do this or I'm going to do this, and I'm going to let a coin flip decide, right? She was doing that for the players as well. They were saying, hey, I like my droid, for instance, Tony, you were talking about a great way to not feel like you have a sword and shield is, well, be a droid, like be a former Imperial droid that's been reprogrammed to, in essence, like I pretty much just made Bender from Futurama. Like, I didn't realize it until after I had made him. But I was trying to, like, you know, I was starting to do some slicing and tech stuff on this old Imperial cruiser, trying to get the laser active. And she was just rolling with it, saying, okay, give me a tech. Tech was one of the skills, obviously, for Star Wars. But a tech check, you need over 10. And if you roll evens, it'll be this. If you roll odds, it'll be this. Anything over 10. And I thought that's not the rules whatsoever. But I thought that was an awesome way to make it even more different. So now I have to hit a DC, but now it's going to go odd or even. It could have two different outcomes, you know, even though it's a success, you know. So allowing them the room to breathe and not being the person, well, actually.
No, I think that was an excellent way to adjudicate things. Is that part of the rules? No, but it fit the game. And I felt like she'd launched that where it sounded natural and where it could have been. And that's really, you know, what you want, where you don't want to be in a situation where it's like, we need to decide something, how are we going to do it? And you're like, yeah, roll some dice. Let me see what you got. Let's see if we can make this make sense in terms of the story. It's impossible to tell with any given person who you're coaching how much they're really going to need. Do they really need you to be there and be a second DM kind of sort of, or really are you really 100% player mode? Either is fine, and there's the fine line with that. As you know, you use your experience. Now you kind of hop into really lean into the player side of that and help them move the story along, go after their cues, things like that. That's another way that you can assist them by really just being an excellent player and giving them the buy-in they need.
Yeah, Tony, that is one of the things I was thinking as well, that, you know, I automatically will do when I'm at the table is instigate a lot of role play that is meant to put a question forth, get an idea of, hey, we need to do this type of thing, and this is where I am, what are you guys doing, and being able to use what we do behind the screen when we're running all the NPCs in the entire world. And now all I need to do is focus that into one player, and I can inject a level of role play. I know, Tony, you do this. Chris, you have started to do it a lot more, too, the more you're running games when you're on the player side, where you will push things forward, which makes it a lot easier for the DM, because when the players are developing plans, Chris, like we did in my birthday game with Top Secret, I was actively being like, hey, what are the plans? What do we have in front of us? What are we going to do? Which made it a lot less for you to have. You just had to now adjudicate, how do these plans work?
Well, I think there is some nuance to that, is that there is the one thing I would say to a newish DM is take small bites. Like, if you're looking to introduce new mechanics or change things, be careful, because as experienced DM, one of the things that I'll tell you is that you don't ever know the way that something's going to work till it happens at the table. It'll happen good sometimes, but sometimes, like the Death Sword in the stupid freaking further campaign, all of a sudden it became this thing that was going to be a campaign stopper where Matt could just basically wipe out anything awesome. That I put in front of him with that stupid sword.
Sort of, what was that sword again? Lord, let's right? review, like, real you, quick, you let's review the sword.
Yeah, you have to be very, cognizant. So I say, like, take the small bites. But I think also a bit to your point is that the one thing that it does, too, especially for a newer DM, is that it gives you a level of empathy so that when you're back at the table as a player now, you understand how difficult. And when you're asking for adjudicate, like when we have we'll say like, oh, hey, that's this or that's that. But we're also understanding of like when you have to figure it out or you need to do this or that. We're like, okay, like been there, where people who've never had to get behind the screen have a different way of interacting at the table where they maybe don't always feel that same level of connection with the DM, where they kind of understand a little, you know, they're more sympathetic than empathetic. So I think it's a good practice for anybody. Just at something like this, like a birthday game or something, find an opportunity to get up in front of people. You know, you have like ChatGPT, find, you know, bust you up something quick. You can take something published, but get out there, because I think it makes you a better player too. To your point, is that you start to learn that you can then drive the story forward. And when you need to like step, when the DM steps back, you know, in the dance at the table there, it gives you a much better idea than if you're a player, because to a player, you're the DM, you show up and all these things happen and you must know all this stuff, right? And then you become a DM and all of a sudden you're like, and I got there and I forgot the words. Right. Or other things like that. Like, I've been practicing the song forever and I stepped up in front of everybody and all of a sudden I didn't know how to play the guitar. You know, that kind of things, like it changes and all of a sudden you start to get a feel for how it works. And it also works against that fear and trepidation. It's like that. It should make you feel uncomfortable a little bit when you're DMing, not in a bad way, but in a way that you're growing. Right. Like that. It should be forcing you into situations where you have to kind of be like, oh, how would I do that? Like, it shouldn't be like, it shouldn't fit like a glove. You have to be comfortable a little bit with the chaos in there and let it breathe a little bit. But it's, you know, I think it's a really important thing. Like it really provides a good level of empathy when you've done it both ways that you don't get when you've just done it one way.
Chris, there's several points. I just kept going, oh, I want to build off of that. Oh, I want to build off of that. Oh, I want to. Yeah. First thing though, is the most, that's absolutely the case. You have to realize it shouldn't fit like a glove. I'm just thinking there was an ancient old Tai Chi master from the 60s, Cheng Man Ching, and he always made the point, he would say, invest in loss. Because unless you're losing things, right? If you're like doing a sparring thing or whatever, how are you learning anything? Unless something is going like, I don't really know how to deal with that. Because if it's only ever things you know, then you're not growing, right? But
that's right.
A little bit on the DM side, I'm kind of, so we're kind of on the player side as DMs, but just pulling back onto the DM side too, you had said the point of take smaller bites. And I think one of the things you can take from this, especially for the people who, you know, let's get behind the screen. I want to try this out. We're going to run it. And we want to make sure that they want to run it again. But on the DM side, I thought two things that were done very well that I've said many times is, one, pre-gens. So get a sense of what people want to play and then give them a character. You did this in Top Secret. I did it in the Avatar game. We've done it in multiple games where it's like you're getting a pre-gen or a Marvel game because we have to just hit the ground running. And the second thing was, she literally built out for this adventure three scenes. You know, we kind of landed on the moon. We get into the temple and we get down into the caverns of where the Kyber crystal issues are happening, and which we had been sent to kind of like secure the area and figure out what the heck's happening. And Tony, back to what you were saying, three encounters a night, that was three. And it ran in, I think, you know, with us eating and cake and everything else, we did it in like 5 hours, you know, so being able to really focus it in with a certain amount of encounters. You don't have this sprawling role play heavy of adventure, you know, right off the bat.
That was a very standard textbook way to approach it in that regard. Absolutely. Like if you go in there, like what are you expecting to do in terms of prep, in terms of rollout? There were other scenes like we're trying to land and we're trying to open the doors, but those were brief. And the majority of the meat of that game was definitely with combat. I remember one time in a random part of Storm King's Thunder, Amber, one of our players, decided to screw with me. And she's like, I'm looking for, she wanted to find a random shopkeeper. She wanted to spend her money. And she's like, all right. And I want to find one. And she's like, what's his name? What's he? It was like out in the middle of nowhere. And you guys are like, oh, flew around till you found somebody. And then he's like, what's
his
here?
Name
what's
is
his
Steve.
Name? What's his deal?
Yes.
And you can her do that bomb. Stuff to us. Yeah. All right, fine. Like, I got to be prepped for crazy little divergence like that. But for the new DM, really have the confidence to say, this is what I'm preparing for tonight. Like, in your head, at least. Like,
yeah, don't give them the DM gotcha moment where, like, dance for me, DM, dance, right?
I believe she said dance monkey. But anyway, yeah, We can get to the sandbox later, but that's over time. You got things built out. You have things in the chamber that you can pivot to if they decide to really have a I'm going left moment where all of the clues and lights are going right, or perhaps they want to pick up a side quest that you weren't expecting. But yeah, that would be my advice. Focused prep. This is what we're doing. This is the adventure, generally speaking. And in that situation, what I'd appreciate is them grabbing onto that and rolling with it.
One of the things you definitely learn, I guess, as you kind of start to roll through it, is that you end up prepping a lot of the wrong stuff. You end up prepping stuff that's not formative to what you're trying to do, is that it needs, you start to learn that the idea is that you put bits in there and then the players and everyone else fill out the bits, but you can't necessarily control everything that's happening or document everything that could happen and then have it all mapped out. Like, it's going to get chaotic. Like, you have to be comfortable enough that it starts to go off and you're able to go with it, but it's something that you start to learn over time, I think. But it's important to get out there. It's like, I think not everyone maybe will love being a DM, right? Like, it's probably something that's unique to a certain group of people or whatever like that. But I think a lot of people that do it don't necessarily realize. Sometimes you could be, I don't know about the prep or everything like that. They have published stuff and everything like that. It's not that hard to get into it. And it's just like the difference that it made in me just developing my players and understanding what the DM put into what he was sending out when you were sending out teasers for Dragonlance or something like that there was weight to that, because now I understood that it's not like it doesn't just appear out of the thing. Like, I understood the hours that you spent sitting at the computer trying to figure out this, searching for this, doing all the, you know, like all in these random NPCs, the names
300
of
years and, from yeah. the cataclysm.
So that you could put them out at the table. But that's like, I think that's to Tony's point, is like, there's a lot in there. Pick like the small bites thing. Pick, if you're doing a session like this one, pick something, a couple simple things, like we're going to do these things. And then the rest of it, let the players fill in that kind of thing. Let them start to interact with it, but keep it simple. Don't try to build the Gone with the Wind in this. Like, this is going to be the most epic session. Like, what will make it epic is the interaction between you and the players. Like, you still have an epic story, but you know what I mean? Like, it's, don't over prep. Like, there's only so much you can do because things go sideways. So just have a good idea of the rules, have a good idea of how, like, that I'm going to be comfortable adjudicating things and that I'm in charge. But yeah, no, back to your earlier point too, Dave. I mean, I was frightened when I had for the Tomb of Annihilation game because I had the three Ys at the table. But I think quickly you find, even within the first session, it was, you guys weren't combative. Like, Thorin was always a bit of an attorney about, like, the rules, but... He wasn't in a combative way, like he was, you know. So
actually, advice says that.
But it was within that session, I started to see that you're just players. And in many ways, it made you better players because you understood that me not being as experienced as that I needed the players to fill out the things, right? Like, I can only spend so much time preparing for your GIF ranger there, but then you really have to come in there and put it in there. And then I have something, right? And then I start to see that. But it's something, it's like a skill that you have to develop doing over time there. But it's like, yes, take small bites, because that is like, things can quickly get out of hand, like the Death Sword. So take very small bites and keep it nice and simple, because... Yeah, because it'll make it a lot more fun at the table for you, that you don't feel like you have to prep this huge amount of stuff. You have to prep enough for the game, right? Like, the game will take care of itself. It's a group of people at the table, not just you. You're just the, you know, the park ranger.
Yeah, I don't, I see the Death Sword that you had given Matt's player in the Wednesday Nighters, and we kind of talked about it a little bit, but like, I see that, and I raise you my dragon slaying sword of +50 from our Pathfinder campaign, because I was trying to shoehorn in you guys going up against like four chromatic dragons and you were like level 8, you know, like, so I'm like, well, I give them a plus, you know. So yeah, I see you and I raise it, but
or something as simple as that coin that let us completely avoid the terrain in Dragonlance.
I love the Dragonlance Adventures, but fuck them for like writing an entire chapter about the Northern Wastes and the difficult terrain and the Wash, And in the first chapter, they literally give you the token. And I'm like, you guys put this in there. Did you not talk to each other, the development team?
We got a nice airborne viewer ball. The horrible waste there is.
Yeah.
Funny.
There's two liches in Ravenloft. What?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Strahd is not the most deadly guy on the block there, dude. But this is reminding
me. What's more canon to my care?
Oh, and dude, Morty, like that didn't even, yeah, none of the design team were talking to each, they just each had, like, it was all siloed. They each had their own thing, and that's all that they made. Still, I love that adventure, but I agree with everyone who runs it. There is a lot of, your own work that you have to do to make it flow for Curse of Strahd. But what this has reminded me of is a story that I always love the story because it really gives you a sense of this. And I think it's so apropos to what we're talking about here, where you're this experienced DM, you know the game, you love the game, you've run the game a lot. You have a lot of skill, okay? But when you're the player, you're there to have fun and be part of the group, not to show off the skill. So my story is that an old patient of mine from years and years back was super into hockey. He was like a hockey coach. Both his sons were huge into hockey. They played hockey all through college. They were even thinking about trying to go up to Canada and get into the pros, like hockey, right? And like they could play at such levels that, you know, boggle the mind, right? His one son joined a men's league though later on, right? When he's working, he wants to go out and, you know, like they do for softball. You go out, you get a couple drinks with the guys, you play some hockey, whatever, right, on a Friday night. And he's going to this men's league, and he was saying, I'm hearing this through his father, that he was always playing at like 50% capacity, right? Because he's trying to just like, he's not trying to own these guys, you know, because he knows he can. They're all like middle-aged guys trying to play hockey, have fun, right? So he's pulling back so that the team and the other team and everyone involved can have a really great time and a lot of challenge and have, you know, and all of this great stories. Until they played this one team where this one guy was just being that guy. You know, he's the alpha. He's the telephone tough guy DM that we all have commenting on all the Facebook stuff where it's like, not in my table. I eat these bitches for breakfast and then I shit out late. Right? Like, cool. And you know, like these
okay,
guys.
Nick.
Yeah, right? Like they're Mickey, right? But with zero actual experience. Anyway, but this guy is doing this so... My patient's son, at like halftime or whatever they call it, I don't know. They play in quarters or periods or some shit. I'm not a sports guy, especially hockey. But he's like, you know what? Fuck this guy. So he turns the dial to like 70%, right? He's still not, and he annihilates. He becomes Michael Jordan playing in a college team, right? Like, he just annihilates. And I'm like, that is what we're talking about here. Like, pull back your dial. You don't have to. You're a great resource. You have the skills, and you can use those skills to enhance the enjoyment of not only your enjoyment of playing, but everyone at the table, as well as the DM. You don't have to turn it up to 11. You can do that when you're back behind the screen, you know? And I always thought that was such a great story because it really illustrates, you know, the humility and understanding the cooperativeness of the game.
Yeah, I did not do that the first game I played with Thorin. First edition had a lot.
You really couldn't with Thorin, though, because he was, as Chris knows, he was a power gamer to end power gamers. He would push the throttle on it all the time, you know?
This is like Thorin in like back in the 90s. And there was much more gotcha moments with how magic worked and how effects worked in the earlier editions there now. Everything is much more very cut and dry. And right, I came right in there and he had this king and an army and he was having vengeance against one of the players. His son became a werewolf and he's like, I have no son. And he's ravaging the land and I killed him. And I completely shattered.
The king? Like, you killed the king, yeah?
Yes, I did. Yes. By using broken ass mechanics that, you know, according to certain episodes of Dragon Magazine, they work. So, got him with the gotcha moment. Your king's dead. Sorry about all that build up, but he's toast now. Hey, buddy, guess who's the new king? You are. And don't do that to your players. That was wrong of me. That was not the best, you know, mentorship I could have provided for him at the time. So, yeah, I would... My point is really, I would stick to what's within clearly within the rules. Don't try to do crazy, over-the-top things that could derail what's going on. Really, truly, like, you could help them in places like where he's like, oh, is this saving throw Dex or Con? Yeah, be there for that. That's a good place to show off that. And yeah, I agree. Now, that I for that, for me, I'm like 20. I'm like, now's my time to crank it to 11. Let me show you how well I know magic. Here it is. And everyone's like,
this is how good a player I am. Watch this.
Yeah,
this is a real pro gamer move right here.
No, for sure. You don't want to show them up and stuff like that. But it's a good thing, and I think it's a good feeling. You start to get the feeling for when you are, like, until you exist on both sides, you have a tough time feeling where you have to pull back or where you have to kind of, like, push it. But I think your point, too, is, like, we'll often turn to another player at the table. Like, we can help to keep the player interaction going by, like, right, and start to show some of the less, it also helps with the players around the tables. We can help the inexperienced players to kind of role play a little bit, get some feel for it and stuff to kind of help them and support what's going on there. But it's, yeah, no, I wouldn't do any kind of, like, killing. That's great. It's a great story.
I would laugh about it now, but that poor guy, there's your whole campaign. That was their whole point.
Yeah, like I would have take it small bites. We're just gonna do something simple tonight. We're gonna have some fun, some laughs. Yeah, nothing too heavy there.
Hey guys, I'm thinking about running a game. I've been wanting to run a campaign. I love Dragonlance. I'm thinking about doing that as my first one. Okay, yeah, that's a really good one for, like, a newer DM because it's a little bit of a, you know, there's a straight ahead story and there's some other side stuff, but it's a very straight ahead story. And then it's like you're at the table and you're like, all right, pro gamer move, watch this. We're going to join the Dragon Army. You know, like,
There are things you wouldn't do with an experienced DM that you might do with an experienced DM where you could sort of push the envelope and provide, you know, you're going to be conscious to make less left turns than you might make normally, right? That a player themselves who doesn't DM a lot will make a lot of left turns very often because to them they feel like that's playing D&D. And as us, we're like, oh God, hold on. Like, I'm striking out this passage. And all right, then throw out that scene. All right, now we're going here and stuff like that. And I think you start to get a feel for how it all works and flows. So,
yeah. All right. Well, I think it's about that time, though, for some final thoughts. This has been good, though. So really, like, what are some great ways we want people to be in, like I said, in the grand tradition of Matt Colville's running the game, which I highly recommend even to experienced DMs. But we want to get people to say, like, oh, see, you can DM. It's not that hard. It looks, but here's the stuff. Now they get there. You're the player finally. How do you keep them there or at least make it a really fun time so they go, oh, that was fun. I would totally want to do that again.
So when I was in my favorite campaigns as a player, I really, really, like, extra dialed to 11, made sure everybody else was having a good time because I want this party to continue. And if you want that person to keep DMing, then you got to encourage them and give them that same kind of courtesy. I recommend you give them the advice they may need at the beginning of the game, show them that keep the game you're preparing concise. When I was showing Tara the fundamentals of the game, I'm like, start with a couple encounters. You don't even have to have the burden of this whole session is on your back. Give me a couple encounters. Run them. Got any questions? You get stuck in there. We don't have to open the books. I'll throw something out there. And you know what? Who knows? Maybe I don't know what happens. But yeah, stick to the golden rule. How would you want to be treated as a new DM? That's what I would want to have for them.
Like, I'd say, like, you're acting as a support role. Like, as an experienced DM, you're there to support. You're there to provide assistance, whether it's they all of a sudden they're like, oh, crap, what's the DC on that usually? Or, you know, what's the potion of healing? You know, how much is that? 2d4 plus 2. I've immortalized it now. but it's, you know, so in those cases, it's those kind of things, but also in amongst the players, kind of to your point, like making sure that they're having fun. Like that's, I think it naturally, like we often get worried about, like, I don't know if this session is going to be any good. And those sessions turn out good because it's the interaction that the players have that is the fun stuff. Like there's stuff that happens in the game that's exciting that you remember, but mostly you remember the jokes and all the other things and the talking and stuff like that. So it loosen the reins a little bit, take small bites, because it will help to shepherd everybody here, use it as a nice easy learning experience. And once you get up there, you'll, you know, now that she's done it, now you've got one under your belt, and now the next time you're like, okay, I'm gonna do this, I really loved this, I didn't really love this. Because that would be I think that's one of the ways when you're new that you want to get better, is that we always, I know I do, I'm assuming we all do, is like we spend that night then thinking about like, I really like this, I hated this, right? And then we're talking to each other and we're finding out what they thought of the different things. And it's a lot of that, it's like, it's an imperfect science, but it doesn't have to be perfect for people to have fun. It's the people at the table. As long as you get everybody having fun and laughing, you're going to have a good session, you know, whether or not you remembered that it was potion healing was 2d4 plus 2 or not. Like it's, you know, and that's the best thing that experienced DM can give you, is that we're just going to make it so that you can just learn those things without, it's a bit of a safety net so that it's not like I'm a new DM and I'm DMing for new players. Like kind of like Lenny did it with his girl or whatever, like that's challenging, right? Because now it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what you're doing. With this, you get that power where there's a little bit more balance and that you can help to smooth things over and act as a safety net, really, because that's what you're there for as an experienced player at the table. You know, you're there, you want to be a player, so you're going to be invested because you know you've been waiting to be a player because you're probably like a forever DM or whatever. And it's a great experience to help to support them without being stepping all over people. Like it's when they need help and to help around the table, because you know what it means to have the players take some of the time, because you're like, I've got to get this done in 5 hours, right? I don't know if this is going to take 4 hours. Well, I know that if people are going to start talking, it's going to take that much time. So it's about just helping with that kind of things and removing those kind of stresses from it. So.
Tony, I think you hit it like straight on the golden rule, right? Like treat new DMs the way you would want to be treated as a new DM, like kind of go back to that time. I think that's great. But I mean, I would say use your powers for good, right? Like you don't have to dial it up to don't join the dragon army if the new DM is running Dragonlance for the first time, right? If the new DM is like, hey, I built up this whole like kingdom thing and the king, and you're going to like, okay, I killed that motherfucker. Like, right, these are not helpful, right? But then also, just as a side note, like, it hurts my heart that two of my greatest characters I kind of played with, well, no, not the one, because, Chris, you were not a new DM at the time, but, like, my GIF Ranger, Roosevelt, Roosevelt, that was in two minutes. He only got to like level 5. He had so much potential, and he's gone to the wind, right? And then Kordak Rockwalker, my Goliath Battlemaster guy, pugilist, right? He only got to level 5 in the Iron Chapter with Letty, and I was like, oh, these are two of my greatest characters, and I have no idea how they go. We're going to have to make them up again.
The Iron Chapter needs to return.
Yeah, right?
The return of the Iron Chapter.
Yeah. But my biggest thing, too, would be, like, you know, like, use your powers for good and be there as the resource, but let them do the game the way they want to do it. Like, if they want to change certain rules and adjudicate it in a different way, that's their call. You know, don't throw a ton of salt on the table, you know, and make it so that they never want to get back behind the screen. Like I'm thinking back to Lenny's game with the Iron Chapter, where he decided that the grease spell can be lit a fire, right? And now I'm in a room that's ablaze because Matt's character threw a grease spell out. Like, I don't adjudicate it like that because I know what the fuck's about to happen with that. But he did, and it made it a great scene. It was he was having a great time with it as a new DM, I know, because I saw his response to it. So, but then also, like, with Bonnie's, with the birthday game for Scott, when she was doing the whole, like, okay, like, she set a DC, I want you to roll above 10 or 12 or whatever, and then even or odd is going to go two paths. That's a completely made-up rule, but it's also one where I went, oh, damn, I think that that's actually something that's, like, useful. Like, it's making me think of, like, the new Daggerheart system. They have certain dice that when you throw them, they create, you know, like, in essence, like, Bane or Boon in a way. Like, they change what's happening, even in their initiative encounters. If you throw the fate die or whatever it is, the monster then gets to attack. So however many times you throw that is how many times it comes up in initiative, which we can get into at some later date. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, if they're making a ruling, if they are deciding that this is how it's going to work in their world, go with it, you know? I mean, just go with it, especially in the beginning, because they're learning the ropes, you know? They're figuring it out. So anyway, that's going to be it for me. This was a great episode. Again, I defy anyone to show me another set of DMs that have mastered the birthday game. I just, you know, feel free. Let, you know, and then we'll do a live stream where we'll both run one of our massive birthday games, and we'll see who the fuck's better. All right, that's how what we'll do. All right, we'll turn it up to fucking 11. How about that?
You can't do two F words.
Yeah, all you telephone tough guy DMs. Let's see you. Let's get on Twitch or something. I don't know, whatever their kids are using these days. Anyway, this is obviously something we brought to the table. But we are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. Like, what does potion healing do? Is it 2d4 plus 2? What is it? I'm not sure. How much damage does a bug board do? Chris is looking it up right now. I see it. But we're DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. Yes, you had it right. So send us in. If you're having problems, questions, issues, anything like that, you can reach us at threewisedms.com and put it in the What's Your Problem field. You can get us by email, threewisedms@gmail.com. You can get us on Facebook and Instagram. That's also everywhere that you can send your challenge for the birthday game, okay? Challenge of the Super Friends.
Or tell us about a great birthday game you want to run yourself.
Alternatively. Yeah, if you want us to show up at your house for your birthday game, something like that, within the tri-state area. And whatever you're going to do with a system as a DM, you got to make sure that you have a set of dice. I would get a set of DM dice myself, have them set out. These are the ones I do when I'm running the game. These are my player dice. Okay, keep them separate because you want them to do different things a lot of times. You don't. You all want them to roll 20s. I don't know what I'm saying. So go to our affiliate link at FanRoll Dice. So fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. You put in the code 3WISEDMS10. That's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10. You get 10% off your whole order, which is really, really nice. They got a really cool new dice tower. I just saw them post today. It's Jeff Easley artwork on it, who did all the second edition artwork. So pretty cool stuff. They also had that mold vase set of dice and stuff out, which were also super cool. Anyway, but that's going to be up for us this episode. And as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you all at home for listening to another episode of Three Wise DMs. If you like what you heard, please give us the 5-star rating in your podcast platform. And if you want to hear us answer one of your questions, this is something that we brought to the table, but we often answer listener questions. So if you want to hear us answer one of your questions, please send it in. We're always looking for new material for the next podcast. We love helping you solve the problems. This is a podcast for Dungeon Masters with Problems. That's what we're really here. And that's it for this week. We'll see you next time. Three Wise DMs. Thank you.